Today's episode features an interview with Stanley Janicki, Chief Commercial Officer of Cedron Technologies, a purpose-driven company that has developed a revolutionary system for processing liquid waste. Stanley, I shudder to ask, but what is liquid waste?
In the world of Cedron, really what it's focused on is municipal biosolids waste. So this is the residuals that come off the back of wastewater treatment plants. When you flush your toilet, where does it go? Eventually it becomes biosolids, and that's what we process. The other world that we're in is the world of dairy and agricultural waste. So after the cow goes to the bathroom, that's what we end up taking. That is what we treat as liquid waste. There's a wide range of other liquid wastes out there that we're planning to tackle in the future, but those are the two that we're really after today because they also make the biggest impact, right? There's 300 and some million humans in the US. That's a lot of liquid waste.
You're going after the biggest opportunities to make a difference. That said, I'm guessing that none of our listeners woke up this morning planning to learn about innovations in processing poop. So why should they care?
The reason they should care is one of the largest problems facing municipalities today. Go to a place like Florida. Algae blooms. These algae blooms destroy the beaches, trillions of dollars in real estate in Florida. What's causing those algae blooms? It's nitrogen and phosphorus pollution, where excess nutrients get into the waterways and those nutrients cause algae blooms. Excess nutrients come from one major place, and that's the land application of biosolids. The other reason they should really care is PFAS. PFAS are forever chemicals. PFAS in your food supply comes from the land application of biosolids on fields. Those two reasons are reasons they should really care. Nutrient pollution, land application of biosolids, over application of these things causes incredibly deleterious impact to the environment.
I've gone through my life living happily without ever thinking about algae blooms or PFAS. What impact do they have on me?
Do you know what an algae bloom is?
I think it looks kind of green, but assume I don't.
Let's dive into it.
Sure.
Algae is like a bacteria plant that grows. If you get too much nitrogen and phosphorus in water, the algae grows like crazy. A waterway or a lake will turn green, and then you have a scum layer on the top that's the algae bloom. The problem is the algae bloom grows so fast that it then runs out of nutrients and dies. When it does that, it starts to rot. And when it's rotting, it consumes all the oxygen in the water. So now all of a sudden, all the fish die. Something the size of the Indian River Lagoon, you're getting fish kills of that scale. You're getting algae blooms of that scale. You could smell it from 500 miles away. When that happens, the tourism dies. The local economy dies. Home values plummet. You impact the livelihoods of local people. And these are the sorts of things that oftentimes, once that happens, it can be very difficult to undo.
As someone who lives in an urban area and does not have an income which depends on tourism or fishing and don't know somebody who does, is this a somebody else's problem or is this a me problem too?
It's really a you problem too. We should all care about our environment. Nutrient pollution is widespread in many major waterways in the US, whether it's the Great Lakes, whether it's the Finger Lakes up in New York, whether it's Lake Champlain, whether it's waterways down in Florida, Puget Sound, Chesapeake Bay, Bay Area, all greatly impact the livelihoods of people. So the idea of capturing the nutrients out is what our singular focus is on those two main waste streams we're working.
Got it. It sounds like a lot of potential for good.
And in a financially sustainable way, where we're making good returns, we can take those nasty things going into the environment, take them out and produce carbon negative commodities that improve the world. That is cool.
We'll cover purpose-driven waste processing, the next frontier in sustainability, on this episode of Meaningful Impact.
Welcome to Meaningful Impact, the podcast where you'll hear inspiring stories about purpose-driven leaders who make a meaningful impact for their companies by making a meaningful impact for a cause. Here's your host, Michael Organ.
How many employees does Cedron have now? And how many employees do you anticipate Cedron having a few years from now?
We have nearly 300 employees today. We're planning on hiring hundreds of people over the next few years to support the incredible growth that we have coming forward.
Oh, wow.
We are a unique company in that not only do we develop the technology, the engineering, the electronics, the process controls, the thermodynamics, finite element analysis, all of this work, we also manufacture the technology. So we have to build the factories that we build the technology in. But then we deploy the technology under a design, build, own, operate, and maintain model, D-BOOM. What that requires now is we need to have a team that can raise capital, that can raise funding, and teams that operate these sites. So for example, our facilities up in Wisconsin or in Indiana, we have to people have boots on the ground in those respective states that actually operate them.
Your primary waste processing technology is called VARCOR. I'm a little squeamish, so please be gentle on me. What flows into VARCOR? And once the processing is done, what comes out of VARCOR?
VARCOR is actually an acronym. It stands for vapor recompression with concentration and recovery. So what goes into the VARCOR, I'll give two examples. One of them is on the human waste side. When you flush your toilet, it goes down the drain, goes to the wastewater plant. The wastewater plant has some gravity things that basically thicken that product up, and eventually they end up with a slurry or a cake, something that looks about like Jell-O. That is what they send to us. It's a very nasty thing. We take that and we turn it into three products. Beautiful, crystal clear water, dehydrated solids that are dry, and then a nitrogen fertilizer. That's what we do on the municipal side. It's very similar on the dairy side, but the difference is those two byproducts are certified organic, the dry solid fertilizer and the liquid nitrogen fertilizer.
On your website, when I looked at the solids, which you refer to as dried class A biosolids, they kind of look like garden soil, and they're shown being handled with ungloved hands. How safe is that?
Yeah, so a class A biosolid, in order to be a class A biosolid, this is a regulated thing by the EPA 503 biosolids regulations. You have to reach pathogen destruction levels and vector attraction levels. Vector attraction is basically the propensity for it to attract nasty things later on in the future, flies, maggots, that kind of stuff. So once you get to those levels, it is a pathogen-free product, and it has low vector attraction levels. So it's safe to go in your garden or wherever else. The issue is that we believe that PFAS forever chemicals are a problem. So our plan in the long run is to use that as a fuel to displace the use of coal, because it would have gone onto the field or somewhere and turned into carbon dioxide anyways, or gone into the river and caused the algae bloom or whatever. Whereas if you can use it and displace coal or some other carbon-intensive fuel, you're getting a two-for-one. You're saving the environmental problem, and you're avoiding using carbon-intensive processes.
Which I think becomes even more impressive when you consider the difference in safety and disposal of biosolids yielded by VARCOR processing versus the Class B biosolids yielded by currently conventional waste processing.
That's correct.
Can you tell me a little bit about what happens in today's case without your technology with Class B biosolids?
Yeah, absolutely. So Class B biosolids, they have to get treated to a certain standard, but they still have substantial pathogens. They still have vector attraction issues. There's a lot of problems to them. So there's really two places that Class B biosolids end up. One of them is land application when they go on a field. The issue is that they're going to have the forever chemicals in them on the field. They're going to have the pathogens on the field. And because they're wet, they have the ability to run off into the river.
Oh.
The other problem with Class B biosolids is because they're really kind of nasty to deal with, people get rid of them. It's common that they get over-applied onto fields and you get the nutrient runoff. The other issue is if they go in a landfill, you're like, well, why don't you put them in a landfill? Immediately, they start producing tremendous volumes of methane. Methane's 80 times worse than carbon dioxide from a greenhouse gas standpoint. So you're in a rock and a hard spot where if you put them on the field, it's a problem. If you put them in a landfill, it's a problem. If you're a municipality today, you have a bunch of bad options that are all expensive. And now we're coming out and we're offering an opportunity that's far less expensive than those two options, which I think is truly exciting that we're less expensive than just dumping it on a field or in a landfill.
As of today, 2025, what percentage of liquid waste is processed into Class A biosolids versus the much less desirable Class B biosolids?
It's something like half the biosolids in the U.S. are land applied as Class B, 25% are landfilled, and 25% approximately are composted or turned into Class A via conventional methods. There are other ways you can do it with a conventional dryer and these other things. The problem is that those methods are very expensive and very carbon intensive. What's unique about our technology is the small amount of energy it uses.
I guess you could say that VARCOR produces very cost efficiently compared to alternatives, byproducts of poop that become valuable. So I'm wondering who owns the dried Class A biosolids that VARCOR produces and what do they do with them?
Cedron, we make this Class A product and we want to do something constructive with it. We feel that the best place to send that product is fuel. It has the same energy as coal. Making a product in a carbon negative way that has the same energy of coal is incredible.
So if I'm a farmer and I've got hundreds of cows producing manure, you take the manure and process it into valuable stuff and do not pay a royalty to the farmer. So what's in it for the farmer then is that you have disposed of the liquid waste for less money than it would have cost him had that farmer used an alternative technology. Is that fair to say?
You nailed it. If you're a dairy farm, your number one cost center, aside from feed for your animals, feed and labor, is manure management. Potentially millions of dollars a year, taking the manure, pumping it out of their lagoon and dumping it on the fields.
I had never heard of that before. What is a manure lagoon? It sounds terrible.
So when a cow goes to the bathroom, what happens? Here's the problem in places like Wisconsin. 4 months of the year, 5 months of the year in Wisconsin, you can't really do anything to your fields because they're frozen solid. So what do they have to do with the manure? They have to store it somewhere. So they have what's called a manure lagoon, which I kid you not, is a massive, massive pond where they just pour the manure and they fill it up. These ponds are hundreds of millions of gallons of manure that will sit there for months on end. And as you can imagine, when that happens, you're getting nitrogen pollution, you're getting all sorts of issues that come out of that. Methane that comes out, nitrous oxide.
I had no idea.
And ammonia evaporates out of that lagoon. Over 10,000 people a year die from ammonia-derived lung problems in the U.S. rural communities. Hmm.
What is the risk to the freshwater supply if flooding occurs and the manure lagoon gets into water that's used for water supply?
Once you've concentrated and stored that much volume of something that nasty, any sort of mistake can be a real, real problem. Basically, 200 million gallons of ticking time bomb. And you'll see examples of this. A quick Google search of manure lagoon spills can show all sorts of examples of this happening. But there's no better way to deal with it now, except for the VARCOR. So instead of going into the lagoon, you go right to a VARCOR. And that clean water, you can irrigate with it. You can discharge into the lake. You can do whatever because it's clean. And you've concentrated your fertilizers so much, you can store them throughout the winter and not have those negative impacts. But even bigger is that when you apply liquid dairy manure to the field, you have to immediately till it, break the sod open, and expose the carbonaceous soil to the environment. When that happens, though, you convert the carbon into carbon dioxide. You oxidize it. You create methane. You create greenhouse gas emissions. If you were to go back 10,000 years ago, 10 feet of topsoil in the Midwest, today it's inches of topsoil. And the reason is that when you plow it, you continue to oxidize that soil. By not having liquid manure anymore, you can switch to what's called no-till farming. This is back to the way it was when it was prairies 10,000 years ago. And what this does is you never break open the soil. What you do is you just cut the next crop and you plant through it and let it grow out and you'll build up that topsoil. So now instead of that field having a negative impact on greenhouse gas emissions every year, you bank carbon into that soil every year. That's going to be transformational as we start to roll this out. And our project in Indiana, tens of thousands of acres are going to convert to no-till farming because of what we're doing. Here's the other thing that's interesting. When you apply biosolids or cow manure for that matter, the nutrients in it are the nutrients in it, but they're not necessarily the ratio of nutrients that crops need, right? Corn, for example, needs a ton of nitrogen. Alfalfa needs a ton of phosphorus. You get what you get. So imagine if you always had salt and pepper mixed together, it would never be seasoned quite right. Whereas what we do is now the farm can precision apply those. And because we separate that nitrogen fertilizer from the phosphorus and the solid product, we end up giving other farmers the ability to precision apply fertilizers. As we start to produce these really unique transformational plant available fertilizers, we're going to transform organic agriculture. Your average organic crop in the US has a 30% yield gap per acre to a conventional crop. The number one driver of that is a lack of plant available nitrogen fertilizers. Imagine the impact when you get 30% more organic crop per acre. You're solving environmental pollution from dairy farms for less cost, and you're increasing availability and access to organic foods. And that's pretty cool.
That is cool. Can you paint a visual picture for us of what this nitrogen looks like?
Yeah, it's ammoniacal nitrogen and it's liquid. It looks about like, it looks like scotch.
By volume, I imagine that the largest byproduct of VARCOR waste treatment is another liquid, which would be sanitized water.
Clean water, yep.
What typically happens to that water?
It depends on the farm and what their needs are. So the project we're working on in Indiana, northwestern Indiana, is 20,000 cows. It's approximately 250 million gallons of this every year.
250 million gallons of water is produced?
They use it as irrigation water.
Wow.
Right. Real volumes. And it's beautiful, crystal clear.
From 20,000 cows.
20,000 cows, a big farm too. They irrigate with it and they avoid having to use well water. So that's another savings for them, as it's expensive to run wells. And they don't have to drain the aquifer. It's a huge deal for them.
Without further treatment beyond whatever VARCOR does, would that former poop water be safe to drink?
Oh, absolutely.
Listeners may remember when Bill Gates demonstrated his confidence in this type of waste treatment technology by drinking reclaimed poop water during an interview on The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon. As one of the world's richest people, Bill Gates could have afforded Evian. So what was he trying to accomplish by drinking former poop water on TV?
Really, it was around destigmatization. Real quick, we formerly were called Janicki Bioenergy, and we developed that technology for the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. So we developed that system and went to Africa. They were great to work with, really loved working with them.
Let's talk about toilet water for a second, because there's a lot of things that go into a toilet other than what it's intended for, ranging from things like dead goldfish to expired drugs to lost contact lenses. Even without foreign objects, fecal matter does transport pathogens which can transmit contagious diseases. So after VARCOR treatment, where does all the undesirable stuff go?
So we're going to kill all the pathogens in the VARCOR. But things like the forever chemicals, the pharmaceuticals, the antibiotics, there's a wide range of things that at the temperatures we're at, we're not going to destroy. We take those and we run them into our power plant. So we basically concentrate it all into a coal replacement. And you run that into a power plant. And you take that and you heat it up to 1,000 centigrade for 2.5 seconds. And you will break down every pharmaceutical. You'll break down forever chemicals. They're not forever at 1,000 centigrade. They last about 2 seconds. You break them all apart, and then you end up with an inert ash and green electricity.
So my former goldfish bubbles becomes ash for fuel.
The volatiles in your goldfish, meaning things that are carbon, things that are that will combust, will go into making electricity. And the ash will remain as the ash.
Huh. Does the VARCOR system offer advantages over conventional waste processing in the amount, safety, or disposal of bubbles? Or do they both use the same very high heat and handle the non-organic stuff as well?
The real magic of the VARCOR is it can make a dry biosolid with 10 times less energy than a conventional method. So when you do that, your operating cost is 10 times less. When you do that, you now have money to run a green electricity power plant. Everyone wants to be an environmentalist. And if you can make the financial case for being an environmentalist that's easier than the status quo, if you are less expensive, every single person in the world will be an environmentalist. All the pushback is gone. The only time you get pushback is when things get more expensive.
Let's focus now on municipal sewage processing. There are a lot more people in this world than cows, 8 billion people versus 1.5 billion cows. So beyond cow manure, applying VARCOR technology to municipal sewage is another opportunity to make a difference, correct?
Correct.
What are the distinct advantages of VARCOR technology for municipalities that we haven't yet discussed as benefits for farms?
Yeah, so if we talk about a municipality, what does a municipality want to do? They want to treat the waste to a sufficient level, and they want to do it at a price that's effective for their citizens. Nobody wants to overly pay for these things. We can provide a lower cost than they're paying now for biosolids processing. And then the biosolids, instead of going into the environment where they would have caused nutrient pollution, they would have created greenhouse gas emissions, they would have had ammonia pollution, we capture them. We create carbon negative ammonia and displace fossil fuel derived ammonia. And then we go take the dry solids in a power plant, produce renewable electricity, and destroy the forever chemicals, the pharmaceuticals, all of those nasties. And then there's no nutrient pollution. So think of this. We'll take biosolids in Florida. We'll take them into our VARCOR and then into a power plant. The power plant will run the VARCOR and sell excess electricity that's carbon negative. So we take this nasty thing and then we sell carbon negative electricity. That is going to be the first biosolids plant of its kind in the world that could do that. When we finish our facility in Florida, millions of people, their waste will do good. It's not waste. We're not wasting it. Right? Waste all of a sudden now becomes a misnomer. It's not the right term for it. And I kid you not, what they're doing right now in South Florida is they're putting their biosolids and taking it to Alabama. There's 9 million people in South Florida. Those biosolids have to go somewhere. They're going to North Florida. They're going to Alabama. They're going to Georgia. They're going all over the Southeast. That is expensive to move biosolids that far. Because remember, the biosolids are 85, 90% water. So they're mostly just trucking water across this massive state. We can solve that problem.
To the extent that you're comfortable talking about it publicly, how much money has Cedron raised so far from investors?
It's not public, but it's on the order of hundreds of millions of dollars.
In the process of raising those hundreds of millions of dollars, I imagine that potential investors have told you no far more than yes. And perhaps especially daunting, those no's have probably come from some very smart people.
I've received hundreds, probably thousands of no's and very few yeses.
Anything worth doing attracts people who will give you really good reasons for not doing it. And yet good only happens when the cause champion does it anyway.
I'll walk you through the real major pushbacks that we've gotten in the past. People knew what we were doing was technically possible, but it's like, were we the right people to be able to get it done? Could we get the engineering right? Could we get the metallurgy right? Could we get the welding right? Could we get the controls right? Could we get the software right? Could we get the contracts right? Could we raise the money? Could we raise the bonds, right? All these things, you need to have technical expertise in so many different fields to be able to get all of that done. And that's really been the biggest pushback.
But you persevered anyway. Why?
There are not very many things you can do where within 5 years, you can be impacting nation state populations. Like, that is cool. And from an impact standpoint, water and wastewater is a $1 trillion business worldwide. There are very few things.
Whoa. Trillion with a T?
With a T. Think about it this way. How many people use a phone every day? A lot. How many people go to the bathroom every day?
More.
How many people drink water every day?
Everyone.
Right. How many people eat food every day? Right. We have a patented, scalable, revolutionary technology with positive impact that's less expensive than what people are doing today. That's why it's worth doing.
Huge plants, huge investments based on your sales pipeline, your expansion plans. What do you hope Cedron's real world societal impact will be 5 years from now, 10 years from now?
Let me give you a number. Our facility in Florida will process a waste from 2.5 million people. And that's one single plant. 2.5 million people's waste converted into green electricity, renewable nitrogen fertilizer, and beautiful crystal clear water. And that's one plant. So over 10 years, we build 2 or 3 plants a year, talking about tens of millions of people's biosolids, the waste that they produce. Instead of having this incredible negative impact to the environment, it's creating positive impacts with carbon negative electricity and carbon negative fertilizer. And the same thing on the cow side, right? It can be just as big.
You've also got a couple of R&D projects active. What are you studying?
We're currently focused on dairy and municipal, but there are so many other negative waste streams. You look at liquor waste. We do want to get into the alcohol business and maybe make some beer and call it shitty beer with 2 D's.
It would definitely make your point.
If you make a gallon of liquor, you're making 30 gallons of wastewater. And that wastewater that they're producing is very nasty stuff. These are very low pH, very difficult to deal with products, producing tremendous volumes of these waste streams. We're testing a wide range of other waste streams to say, now that we have those two verticals, where do we go next? Where else can we provide a cost that is less and an environmental outcome that is better?
A cost that is less and an environmental outcome that is better at scale.
We're not going to go after something that's like, hey, here's a little tiny project, right? We want to be able to fundamentally change the outcome of greenhouse gases and nutrient pollution in the US. And then, of course, the world after that.
Along the way, has Cedron had any near-death experiences or at least moments where your faith was tested?
Definitely during the Silicon Valley banking crisis in 2022, there was no money for anything for a brief period of time. There's a certain level of personal stress when you need to raise money for a company because 300 people losing their job on the same day that you know and care about, that would be very rough.
After graduating from college with a degree in computer engineering, you began your career as a software engineer at Cisco. That sounds like a pretty good gig. So why did you make the leap to Cedron in 2018 before the company had earned its first dollar?
The software industry, at least what I was doing at Cisco, was fun. I enjoyed it. It was a very, very good job. But for me, it didn't have the impact that I wanted. And when you join a startup before it's made any money, there's also a personal financial aspect. It'd be a lie to say that there wasn't some hope that there'd be some payout eventually.
Sure.
But doing something impactful, right? That mattered to me personally.
A co-founder of your former company, Sandy Lerner, has been open about the personal toll of building and leading Cisco. If you knew in 2018 how hard it would be on your personal life to get VARCOR to this point and that the battle continues, would you have done it?
I don't think words could convey the personal angst that it's taken. I probably still would have. I wouldn't be where I am if I hadn't gone through that.
I think a lot of cause champions can relate to that. When we return, I'll ask Stanley the big question.
The Big Question is brought to you by CSR.org, which showcases purpose-driven leaders who do well for their companies by doing good for a cause. Discover inspiring examples of corporate social responsibility at CSR.org.
Would you describe yourself primarily as an environmentalist who has found a way to raise money to scale your sustainability goals? Or are you primarily a profit-oriented entrepreneur who discovered that an environmentally friendly technology just so happened to be the best way to maximize your return on investment?
Let me put it this way. If you can have an entity that has an environmental impact that makes money, every day that environmental impact can be bigger. So I would say I'm equally capitalist and environmentalist, because you really can't have one without the other in the way I view it. Because if you can make money being an environmentalist is not this pejorative term anymore. You can be a capitalist environmentalist.
I think what you're saying is that it's not an either or, that your attraction is the combination of the two.
Exactly. Being able to do them both at the same time is pretty cool.
Is the point.
Yeah, that's exactly the point.
One of the reasons that I was so excited to get the opportunity to interview you is because the mission of Meaningful Impact is to promote mutually beneficial corporate citizenship. Cedron is a beautiful example.
Thank you. The questions you put together and the research you've done have been phenomenal. So I appreciate it. And I really enjoyed our time together today. This was great.
That's all for this episode. We hope that the next inspiring story will be yours. For ongoing inspiration about how to make your difference, subscribe to Meaningful Impact, wherever you listen to podcasts.